SiriusXM Sports presents
At the Races with Steve Bick.
Enough! Horse racing, handicapping,
interviews.
This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Tuesday, race fans. Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. Which reminds me, got to take a look at the new app, right? With the 100 new stations. Did I read that right? I think so. I guess a whole bunch of new music channels. But Tina and I were in the car the other day, and I said, you know, We gotta take advantage of the app. It's one of those things. If you don't get into a swing of it, you just don't think of it. Our website too, stevebick.com. Day two from the weekend, and hard not to get excited about Del Mar. And we'll do a little bit of West Coast swing this morning, as well as continuing some of the recap from the weekend, and pretty much the second half of the show will be somewhat West Coast and Del Mar centric, including a visit with Billy Koch, Little Red Feather. And I think last week I mentioned the fundraising handicapping that they're going to do. LRF Cares, Little Red Feather, Gary Fenton, and Billy. And Billy will give the details, and we'll get the Del Mar preview from his perspective. A couple of other things. Gary Young, Clocker to the Stars, Bloodstock Agent Wiz, gigantic racetrack character. All of the above. Gary Young later this morning. And I'm expecting Bob Baffert, too, in hour three. We'll get his postscript to the Los Al Derby win by game winner, which was very good, as we said yesterday with Johnny. I think that was a shot across the division bow from game winner. It's a little tough to read because Los Al is so unusual, and you know that long, long straight, which actually I think enhances his effort. He was really only starting to drop down and really engage. What, the last 16th plus? That's where he really started a run. So I think you're pending what happens out of the Jim Dandy and the Haskell Saturday, etc. I got a feeling game winner ends up your favorite for the Traverse Stakes. So that's three, right. Gary Young, Billy Koch, and Baffert. For some West Coast Del Mar, where the turf meets the surf, and I gotta tell Deja to go searching through the computer and find the Bing Crosby jingle. We can't visit Del Mar without Der Bingelhofer. So I'll explain that to you in a minute. We're also going to check in with Pete at the top of hour two. Pete was pretty much everywhere the first 4 days of the meet. And we'll get his reaction to the opening moments of Saratoga 2019 and what else he's got going on. And also on the contest front, because there were a couple of, as we hinted at last week, a couple of on-sites like Los Al and more, and Chicago as well. But we're also going to tease a little contest that we're going to have the that we've been threatening for the last couple of years. There's going to be an At the Races contest that starts this weekend and culminates Labor Day weekend with like a championship, you know, kind of the format, in fact, that we do with Johnny, you know, kind of like beat the host, very similar to that. We'll pick a stake race each week. We're going to keep it simple. Pick a stake race each week. I pick a horse. You pick a horse. Everybody, you know, that qualifies, that, you know, picks a horse that does better than the one I picked, et cetera. You'll qualify, and then there'll be a championship at the end of the summer. It should be a lot of fun. We'll get all the details. I think tomorrow it's going to the specifics. And the NHC team will... we'll have a website set up. It'll be at horseplayers.com. So that's going to be kind of cool. I'll talk about it with Pete. We've been talking about this for like 3 years. So it's cool to get it set up. Andy will be around the third hour. And I guess one of the byproducts of the 2 days off is that Andy, I said to him yesterday, we were talking in the afternoon. I said, you want to do a show? And he said, yeah, all right. You know, a lot of years, I really don't get too many chances. You know, once things start, you know, when it was 6 days, it was a lot to ask Andy to show up on the 1 day off. So that's kind of cool. And, of course, Andy's show at the Parting Glass starts Thursday. And he'll give you I won't tell you the lineup. I'll let Andy talk about the lineup, but it kicks off nicely. So Andy later, Dick Powell in the second half of the show, too. Dick doing a little better after a little health, tailspin, but he's all right. And we'll talk to him later. Some Presque Isle action. I've also got Eddie Keneally and Catherine Day Phillips lined up, and I just got the okay for a visit that I was looking forward to. Michael Dickinson, who we haven't spoken to in ages, and I mean ages. And I guess I can put two things together here as it happens, because I'm going to guess it's close to 10 years since we've had Michael on. And originally we'd have Michael on about horses, and then we had Michael on about Tapita. And we're going to have him on about both, because Pamina, the winner of the Ontario Matron on Saturday. And after we talk about Michael rebooting his training operation, we'll talk about the track surface issues and his view of things. You know, and obviously not just the tracks that are utilizing Tapita, but what he thinks this winter's difficulties portend going forward. Because there's a lot of, you know, murmur that long term the industry is going to have to revisit the synthetic surfaces. Not that they're perfect, and not that they eliminate horses going wrong and fatalities. They've got their own, you know, certain kind of different strain that is placed on physical property, most notably soft tissue issues. And I can ask Michael about that, because certainly, you know, he's in a unique position to understand the surfaces and the strains they place on the racehorse. So Michael Dickinson today, after an extended absence. I'm looking forward to it. One of the really interesting people in this era of the sport. I mentioned that there was a bit of a hybrid topic because technically, yesterday was the 15th. By the way, thanks to everybody for the birthday greetings to Tina. She appreciates it. But she had to work at school a little bit yesterday. And she ended up working quite a while. And then she came back and mowed the grass. She won't let me near the lawnmower. She handles the it's her arena. She says I can't. I'm inept. cutting the grass. So she ended up cutting the grass. So she said, because my birthday was sort of limited, I get the whole birthday week. So yeah. So now we'll be celebrating Tina's birthday all week, including Thursday, Friday, Saturday at Monmouth Park, heading down to Oceanport and looking forward to that. Last year we couldn't go because it overlapped with the Captain Gala. And one more time, captaincares.org to join us a week from Thursday. We're honoring and celebrating the 30th anniversary of Easygoers' remarkable summer, the summer of 89. And the Whitney Travers sweep. So we hope you'll consider it. It's a lot of fun. It's $125 per person. If you're under 30, it's $100. And it's at the city center for the first time. You know, right on Broadway, 6 to 10. Silent auction, live auction. Shug McGahee and Allison being feted. Quite nice, and it's not a formal. It's you know, just cocktail attire. Really nice. So we hope you'd consider. And there's a few tables. They're well over 100, and I really don't know what the capacity is. Gonna honor Bill and Betty Casey, who have been big supporters of Captain. And what Captain is, for those of you that don't recall from last year, Captain is a safety net, you know, family service style organization, particularly looking to support preteens and teens, young adults that are in crisis and at risk. And they do a remarkable job, and they're one of the Capital District's invaluable help organizations. So the Casey's and Lisa Malloy and Rerun, home of Saratoga Snacks, Lisa and her work for retirees, and Lisa on a regular basis taking horses off the racetrack and reconditioning them and sending them back out into the world as trail horses and as pleasure horses, anything. So really going to be a lovely evening next Thursday, 25th. And I get the honor to MC. All right. Sorry. So is that all the hazarai here? Did I get everything through that I needed to? We cleaned up most of everything from yesterday, right? A couple of things that we didn't get to. I'm just looking. We talked about, a late, of course, in the Delaware Handicap. And, whatever anybody wanted to think about, you know, her prospects for the year. She certainly has taken two giant steps forward and is into a nice groove right now. We're going to talk to Eddie Keneally, as I mentioned. Eddie and the Anderson team. Pair of steak wins by your side in the Sanford, but Parlor down in the Glasgow. And speaking of Elate and Parlor, they combined together in the Saturday cross country. The cross country was terrific. Came out quite nice, and 1,100 and change if you tied. And the tough horse in that sequence, obviously Parlor and Elate were very short, paying three and change and 250, 260. And Sister Charlie, of course, was no challenge. The tough horse was Ruler of the Nile, that paid 27. In that allowance in New York. So 1,155 was your cross-country pick five on Saturday with the two Delaware races. We talked about I mentioned Capital Temptress. Anthony Margotta, I got to get Anthony on. Bronx Beauty, and Anthony's had really a nice steady supply of nice horses of late. And Jose Ortiz won all four of those stakes. How about that? Unbelievable. We have to get to Larry Jones, too. Larry, with his win, we talked to Brad Cox, obviously, and Jack Sisterson. The American Derby, we mentioned Mike Maker. Owen Hardy with the Hatoof game winner. Yeah, pretty close. Tiller and Pink Lloyd. The races beyond Sisterson and Lexingtonian from Laurel on Sunday. How about that day of racing that kind of snuck up? Late night powwow wins the Twixt, and late night and Javier Contreras, you know, suffered her first loss in ages in the Madison when she was third in the grade one, beaten seven. But then she comes and wins this Twixt, wins easily. And we'll see what they do with her. I don't know if the ballerina, is that going to be kind of a revisit of the Madison? You kind of wonder. The Jamila, you had a big price winner for Hammy Smith and Men's Grill Racing. Hammy sending out Ghoul's Night Out. An exciting winner. Paid $40. Fear No Evil at 1-2. For Tom Albatroni. He's kind of stubbed the toe coming out of the Intercontinental. But, you know, this was 5.5, and I don't know if, yeah, it's been a while since Hear No Evil had gone, you know, under 6 furlongs turf sprinting. She's been doing 6 and 7. Yeah, the Captiva Island over the winter, and she didn't run great there either. So I don't know if she wants any part of those kinds of short, you know, real aggressive turf sprints. But Ghoul's Night Out, a winner with Julio Vargas for Hammy, and two in a row, and I think a stakes debut for the 5-year-old mare. That's a nice little score. In the Jamila, you had Oldies But Goodies for Mike Trombetta, and longtime client and breeder Larry Johnson. Maryland homebred wins the Ben's Cat. Alex Cintron, and did it really in hand on the front end. Maya Engelhart and Tom O'Grady's Dirty was actually 4-5, which seemed like a pretty aggressive number. We told you about getting 18-1 again on Lexingtonian. If you've been a Lexingtonian fan and you hit him in the Chick Lang, boy, oh boy, has he been good to you. Karama in the Stormy Blues, Michael Pino for Shadwell. And I think, is that it? Is that the 5? 1, 2, 3? 4 or 5. There you go. That was the Laurel action. We mentioned, we got that in. Pretty good. Pretty good. We've cleaned up most of, a lot of the weekend. And we'll try to, you know, it's tough when you got things like Del Mar opening on Wednesday. It kind of, you know, it gets busy. What we'll do, and we'll start with Eddie Keneally, I think. Yeah, we'll get Eddie in for a quick 10-minute hit, and I don't think we need a I don't think we can break, actually. Deja, I think we're in trouble on that front. All right, let me just send you Eddie's number, and we'll be up and running. And as we have Deja reach out to Eddie, and we had him on TV, so I we had a lot of the fun. I really had a good time with Eddie, who's a great guest and who seems really poised, actually, for a big summer. I can tell you that got a chance finally. You know, I have not really conversed much with. You know, Casey's been laid up, and he looks like he'll be home Thursday after a stint in this rehab facility. And there you go. I'm sorry, Deja. I sent Eddie's number to Eddie, but I think he already knows his number. That's what. yeah, this is what happens when you're trying to do this on the fly. There you go. That's Eddie Keneally's number to you. heard from Case yesterday, and I've been checking in with Joe, and she'll be with us tomorrow. Maybe we'll have her pick up the mic, and knock on wood, Casey seems headed back in the right direction after just a terrible 2 months. I can't begin to tell you. And I thank everybody that has reached out, and, I've passed everyone's concern, along to Casey and Joe. So that was yesterday was heartening. And actually, Case sounded good. He sounded really good. A bit of a relief after what has been a arduous period. Eddie Keneally standing by. He's joining us now. And Eddie got Saratoga season off to a rousing start. Nice performance, and gets a two-year-old, obviously a two-year-old that's got plenty of upside, going forward into the into the summer, and there's nothing better than winning a race like the Sanford by your side, the Constitution, two-year-old. Eddie, congratulations.
Thank you, Steve. Appreciate that.
You know, this was a fun race, too, and you don't always know, even with that field size, four foes, sometimes that's a hindrance rather than a help. People think that, small field, it's easier. Not necessarily. And, kind of thought that Tomato Bill would go to the lead. What was the plan with IRAD? And talk about, your thoughts going into the race.
Yeah, well, the horse had come off a victory at Churchill Downs in his first out, where he broke okay, but allowed some speed horses to be on the lead. And he took himself back a little bit to be third and fourth in the middle part of the race, and then came and finished up real strong to get the job done. So my ideal plan on Saturday was to do something similar. We were hoping he'd break sharp, and of course he did. He broke extremely sharp, but IRAD allowed the speed from the inside to go ahead and go, and therefore our horse was allowed to relax just in behind the leaders on the outside, which was a perfect setup, really. And you're right, oftentimes in a small field you can get traffic problems, but the fact that we had an outside post in a small field, I was happy to see that, and it turned out as exactly how we had hoped it would.
The Constitution babies are, and we talked about this on Sunday, there's been 9 of them. And they've made 11 starts, Eddie. Now a stake win, right in the the opening moments of his stud career. They're also winning at a frightening clip, frankly. What was your impression when he came to you? And talk about some of the backstory on him.
Yeah, well, we bought him for a reason because we felt like he was a runner and an athlete, big. Big strong horse that could really move well, light on his feet. So we sent him directly to Eddie Woods last September in Ocala, and Eddie broke him and got him going and gave us some good reports throughout the winter. And I spent some time with Eddie during the winter months at his farm watching the other horses and this horse included train. So we were aware of how he was progressing and how he was doing what he was asked to do with ease. And then he came to us in April at Keeneland, and he continued to move forward. So at all times, we were pretty high on this horse.
Well, dividends paying off right away. The Grade 3, and lots of options. Heading toward you know, the deep part of the summer, Eddie, and at the end of the meet, of course, you got the grade one opportunity in the hopeful, and from a distance standpoint, it doesn't look like, you know, there's going to be any issue for him stretching out as he matures. And how far along would you guess he is as a two-year-old in terms of maturity and physical development?
Yeah, I mean, he's got a ways to go. I believe he's still learning, even though he's pretty professional horse. I do think that there's going to be more improvement there. You never know for certain. You assume a horse is going to relish a longer distance, but you don't know for certain that they do until you actually try it. But certainly going forward, wherever he runs at his next start, whether it be the hopeful or somewhere else, it would most likely be at a distance further than 6 furlongs. And we'll be learning from that, and hopefully he does what we think he will, which is improve.
Well, I mentioned the Anderson team, and it was a great great Saturday because down at Delaware, you win down there. You win with Parlor.
Yeah, Parlor won a $100,000 stake called the Glasgow down at Delaware Park on Saturday, and we were delighted with him to win a stake. He's been a very good horse for us, and so that was great. Anderson Stable at the moment has 2 horses at the track and 1 turned out, and the 2 that are at the track bowl won stakes on Saturday, and the 1 at the farm that's getting ready to come back in is also a stakes horse. So he's having a good run at the moment, Brad Anderson.
That's perfect. Very nice. Good for Brad. This was his first graded stake win, coming here to start the Saratoga summer. And clearly, by your side, feels like there's plenty to look forward to. Also, Eddie, you're operating, back home out of Kentucky, sending horses out at Ellis. Simultaneously, a handful of horses. I think you said, what, you had 8 horses on the grounds?
Correct. The bulk of our stable is at Churchill Downs. We have a few horses at Saratoga, and we'll be rotating horses in and out of there during the meet. At the moment, we have 8 horses at Saratoga. So that'll probably be what we'll do throughout the summer, and I'll be traveling back and forth quite a bit. So it takes its toll, the moving and the traveling.
No doubt. I want to ask you about one of your Ellis runners, in fact. Magician, you got a Magician colt, Fenwick Station for Summer Place Farm, just a $20,000 Keeneland, must have been a weanling at the time in the November sale. Tell us about this colt.
Yeah, Fenwick Station is a Magician, 2-year-old unraised, making his first start going a mile on the grass at Ellis Park on Friday, and he's ready to go. He's a horse that may not win his first out. He's a horse that will learn a lot in race one and hopefully improve with racing. And, I'd expect a good effort, but I can't tell you he's going to win.
Well, and of course, Magician, didn't really get much of a chance to establish himself in North America. Was relocated last year to Ireland, so we're only going to see, a handful of the sons of the son of Galileo. So, what kind of a horse? Just so we know about the Magicians, what kind of horse are they?
Turn grass horses.
Yeah.
Mile and 16 type horses, I would assume. And that's kind of what our horse is. He's not a sprinter, and that's why we're going to run him at a mile first time out. And we're fortunate that at this time of year, we're already running 2-turn, 2-year-old races, which is great. And I think that's kind of where he's going to be effective.
And it's interesting too, because we talked not just with you about the Ellis program, the $50,000 maiden races. We also had Jack Sisterson on yesterday, and Jack was talking about starting some at Ellis, and he's going to bring. He had a 2 maiden winners that he's going to bring from Ellis for Saratoga later in the meet, including a stakes try. So this is a topic. Buff Bradley, we've discussed it with over the years. Kenny McPeak and Dale Romans, etc. I mean, the Ellis versus Saratoga situation. It's an interesting equation.
Yeah, well, I mean, the bunny is the bottom line, and currently we're running for very, very good money at Keeneland, Churchill, and Ellis. So it's more of a circuit now here in Kentucky, and we don't have to move as many horses out in July and August to run for big purses elsewhere because there's big purses here as well. So I think that's why you're seeing fewer horses moving out of Kentucky. And to be honest with you, New York is an extremely expensive place to conduct business.
That's for sure. Let me ask you also about another starter. This is going to come, I think, on Saturday. Amazima, who we saw last fall, debut at Belmont, and then after a fairly lengthy absence, he was, sidelined 6-7 months, came back and ran pretty well in that race at the end of June at Churchill.
Yeah, ran well at Churchill. Unfortunately, she didn't get it done. She wasn't beaten very far, but we ran her a mile and an eighth off a long layoff. And maybe she might have gotten it done if it was a little shorter. But now she has a race under her belt. She's running at a mile and a 16th this time, so that's well within her range. So it's a good maiden race, so I'd expect her to run real well and be right there.
Nice. Later in the meet here at Saratoga, some thoughts, anything that we should know?
Yeah, we're going to run Boxwood on Saturday in the coaching club. Boxwood is a filly that run six times for us, and she's had three wins, two seconds, and a third from six starts. She's a listed stakes winner on the grass at Gulfstream. She won the Ginger Brew back this winter at Gulfstream Park and had a little time off after that, but came back in a 309 filly and mare allowance at Churchill last month and ran really well, beating the knack. So we're taking a shot in the grade one, hoping to get a piece of it.
Good for you. I love it. And haven't had a chance to look ahead to that field. I did look ahead a little bit last night, Thursday. Let's get a quick glance at Chief Know-It-All and Kid Lemuel.
Yeah. Well, Chief Know-It-All is in a claiming race, so we'll talk about the other horse. And he's ready to go. And no issues. Very, very happy with Kid Lemuel. He broke his maiden at Churchill for a big purse in May, and then he came back in 1X that was taken off the turf and was finished second, beating the neck. So he fits in an A other than at Saratoga. This one came up a little deep. He'll be right there. May not win it.
That's all right. That's the kind of insight we're looking for. Eddie, always happy for you to do well, and great to have you here at Saratoga. And clearly, could be talking again as soon as next week with Boxwood running in the coaching club.
Thanks so much, Steve, and I appreciate it.
Not at all. Eddie Keneally, everybody, and you can visit Eddie. They got a very nice website, Keneally Racing, and always happy to get a chance to congratulate Eddie on a success. We're going to might as well stay right here. Otherwise, I can tell you, Deja, we're going to end up in big trouble. So let me give you Michael Dickinson to reach out to, and we'll look forward to this. Michael Dickinson, I mentioned earlier, has not been, I'm going to guess, 10 years, I'm going to say, since we've had Michael on the show. And that conversation was about Tapita and about the synthetic surface. So we will do some of that because obviously the winter that went on here, particularly with Santa Anita, that has created a new dialogue, without a doubt. I mean, and you can understand the industry. Certain portions, I don't think want to address it, frankly, but it could be, one of the answers that the industry needs to offer, that a surface that goes a long way toward limiting catastrophic breakdowns. And Michael Tapita has worked tirelessly first to develop Tapita and then to constantly improve it. But he also waded back into training the last 18 months plus, and it's an absolute pleasure to have Michael Dickinson join us. And Michael, I was speculating the last time we talked.
Yes, right. Well, it's a pleasure to be on. Thank you for inviting me.
Not at all. Let's talk training first. And I guess the first question is, what drew you back in?
Oh, well, I love horses, really. That was the main thing. Yes, I love horses. And I've got a smashing farm, Topeka Farms, a beautiful facility. I love training here. And I've got three lovely fillies for George Sawbridge. And our goal is to win a graded stake with all three of them. So we've still got two more to do.
Well, you knocked out one. And Pamina, let's start with her. Talk about the Ontario Matron Saturday.
Okay, well, she wants a longer distance than that. And she might, she handles the Peter all right. Mr. and Mrs. Strawbridge, they take their horses home for the winter, and they turn them out in a big field, like 120 acres, with 10 other horses. And it's nature at its best, and they move around, and they come back. They're hard, and they're tough, and they're half-fit, and they're sound. So it's lovely training them. So that was one thing, except two breezes ago, Pamina didn't breeze very well at all. And we were always targeting this race. So I said to my riders, well, we can't send her to Woodbine unless she's 100% right. It's a long way to go. So I said, we'll give her one more breeze. On your head be it. So you need to tell me if she's spot on. If not, we're not going to run. So I put them under the pressure because we don't take any prisoners here. And I put them under pressure, and I said, on your head be it. So the owner and Adam rode her, and they said, we feel very confident she'll run her best race. So they still have a job.
And this four-year-old, you know, does seem to have plenty of upside, and it seems like there's more you can do with her. I mean, you know, what do you think ultimately as she matures? What's her best distance? And
definitely her best distance is 10 to 12 furlongs.
How about that?
Yes. Yep. And she likes giving the ground. She went there because it was went to Woodbine because she doesn't like firm turf, and we're in a drought at the moment, and nowhere is firm, really. And if it is firm, you don't know about it until the morning of the race. So we sent her there for the Topeka because it's more forgiving.
Pamina, you know, had dabbled in the stakes ranks, and you had sent her up there for the Maple Leaf last year, and she was running late under Emma Jane Wilson. And of course we saw her in New York and, you know, you've kind of moved her around trying to find opportunities, for her. This was not one of George Strawbridge's homebreds though. This was a purchase.
Yes, it was. Yes. They bought it out of a Tyrolean training sale. She's a lovely filly. Yes. Very kind hearted, very genuine. And it's going to be much better going longer. Yeah. Just remind, you know, I took her there because it's the only place I could guarantee we were going to get good going. A friend of mine took two horses to race on the Topeka at Newcastle in England. And they were both turf horses. And one of them loved soft turf. And the other liked very firm turf. So he didn't know how they were going to. So he ran them both. And they both won on the same day. A soft ground horse and a firm ground horse. So at least you know what you're going to get when you go to Woodbine.
Well, we're going to talk about the surface that you developed. I want to find out what's next for Pamina. You certainly have got some options. You sent her to Chicago last year. Is she a Beverly D candidate?
Probably not at the moment. No, I think if she's going to win a grade one, it's going to be at 12 furlongs.
Interesting. So that gives you, what is that? Well, that's, I mean, obviously the Breeders' Cup mile, but you're not going to challenge her that deeply, at least
no.
Right now. What
no.
The EP, what about the, what is it? The not the EP,
EP Taylor.
EP Taylor. Yeah.
Yes, that would be great.
Very nice.
It's on the list. Yes, there's lots of opportunities.
Well, in addition, you know, she didn't win, but Lift Up ran ran a nice race at Delaware as well.
Yes, she did. She was just beaten by a better horse, Billy Mott, the John Montefilly, a little bit better than we are. But she was only beaten a length, so we're happy with her. She's won a stake, so we're trying to win a graded stake with her. She has a great turn of foot. Great accelerate. Just get her to relax early.
She is a Strawbridge homebred and out of the nice dynamic cat and by Go Sapper. And what's interesting, Michael, is that you mention her burst and her speed. The Dynaformers are plenty long-winded. You got that going for you, and the speed must come from the Go Sapper side. It makes her kind of tactical, and feels like even though she's a five-year-old, there's still some even better things to come, maybe?
Yes, I do, absolutely. We haven't seen the best of her yet. The whole breed get better going longer. And, yeah, she'll win a stake or two before it's all over.
Well, you know, certainly you're hitting your strike rate is pretty sharp, hitting over 30%. You know, with the handful of horses, are you looking for more work, or are you just happy to to have the handful for Mr. Strawbridge? And
yes, I'm not looking at the moment. We've got 10 horses, so I'm not looking to have more than 15. But the first of all, it's got to be a nice owner, and then a good horse.
Those are not unreasonable requests.
Right, thank you.
what has happened, and what's next, speaking of nice horses, what about that Perfect Spidey?
Perfect Spidey, yes. It's just on the easy list at the moment, and it will be running in September.
Well, and there's another nice owner when it comes to Chuck Fipke.
Mr. Fipke, yes.
You bet. And that's a Fipke homebred out of the lovely Perfect Sherrill. Well, Michael, from obviously from the training side, that part of it, you're right back into full swing. Give us an update, Michael. It's been a very tumultuous first half of the year, and I'm sure you were watching the situation unfold in California with the Santa Anita, all the surface questions, your feelings about what the industry can do and how you can help.
Okay, well, I developed the first Peter tracks. That was 15 years ago. Took me 4 years, and we put some down, and they were okay. Golden Gate's done very well. Prescal's okay. And we did one in Australia. So then my wife came along and said, I can do better. And I always knew that she could. So I said, but you better know more about sand, fibers, wax, and polymers than anyone else. So she studied hard. And she's done 8 years of research and development. And now doesn't produce Tapeter. She produces Tapeter 10 because she made 10 improvements from mine. Unlike dirt, which has been around for 100 years and is past its sell-by date, synthetics are getting better, better, and better all the time. Now, she did a track at Newcastle in England, and is it a success? Well, John Gosden ships his best maiden 7 hours in a van just to break the maiden there. So I think dirt is coming to the end of its life. There isn't a racetrack in the USA that hasn't had a period of catastrophic breakdowns over time. Dirt tracks have been around for 100 years and past the sell-by date. The track superintendents do a brilliant job, but they can't control the weather, which alters dirt surfaces dramatically. And dirt is like an IED. It blows up in your face. Dirt racing can't function without a shed load of drugs, a massive amount of fatalities, two things the public have stated that up with which they will not put. So when the politicians come along and they say, what can be done? And someone says, well, you have 50% or better improvement with synthetics. It's game, set, and match. Now, a lot of people are skeptical because a lot of the synthetic tracks they put in 15 years ago weren't good enough. I don't blame them for that, but they're 10 years behind. They need to look at the new synthetics, which are getting better every year. So, dirt's done.
And Michael, you know, you mentioned the polymers, and I heard you mention the fiber sand, and
yes,
you know, that part of it, and I suppose the less than satisfactory experience that the industry had with the first go around, and that includes things like you know, the difficulties with the cushion track and the pro ride, and the one that Keeneland foisted on everyone, you know, the original poly track that was, you know, that really, in terms of temperature reaction and you know, the situation at Del Mar with the tides and with the morning cool and the afternoon heat. Then there's the whole question of being able to be as close to dirt as possible, because I think from the breeding community, you know, there's the concern about, you know, what changes it basically hits into the breeding side. Do you think the latest generation, the Tapita 10 in this case, is closer to replicating dirt results and what we expect in terms of the American thoroughbred and speed from that standpoint?
Well, we're not trying to replicate anything. We're just trying to make the safest track, whatever that is. The original synthetics 15 years ago weren't good enough. Two or three of them we knew before they were going in they were going to fail. But however, that was 15 years ago, and now, you know, the synthetics are getting better every year. I was at Woodbine, and I asked all the jockeys, well, lots of jockeys and quite a few trainers, and they all love the Tapita 10 up there.
And that is the latest, so the surface that has the most recent incantation,
yes,
is
at Woodbine, yes. Right, now then, turf and dirt vary hugely from the weather, from the dry and the wet, hugely. Now, Tapita varies a little bit, but maybe only 10%, where turf and dirt will, you know, differ 75%. They completely change their format in rain or in drought. Well, the Tapita it'll be a little bit slower, but only like half a second in the heat, and it's a little bit quicker after a lot of rain or in the cold. But it varies a tiny amount, but that's all.
Michael, one of the other critiques that and flags that gets raised whenever this discussion is happening industry wide. And this is a little bit of inside baseball as opposed to what we've, you know, what we're dealing with from external pressures. The industry recognized that, okay, fatalities, absolutely, and catastrophic breakdowns greatly reduced. At the same time, there were other pressures and other areas of the horse that seem to be affected by getting over the surface, and I'm sure I suppose a lot of that is conformation, and this gets back to the breeding, and you know, dirt horses maybe who knows, pastern angles and etc. But the soft tissue industry issue that gets, you know, the injury issue that gets brought out about whenever synthetics are brought up.
Yes, what you say is 100% correct. Because the tracks were dreadful. Of course you're going to get injuries on those. We saw them when they were doing them, and they put them down. And we said, oh, no. So what you're saying, but you're 10 years out of date. The old synthetics were bad. I had a car once, and it used to break down. But I never, you know, so I just buy a better car. And now it doesn't break down.
So, in other words, when confronted with the, you know, the quote unquote the soft tissue injury,
yes,
argument. We can say that this generation of the synthetic alleviates that concern or mitigates.
That's interesting. I had some samples of some of the old synthetics from 10, 15 years ago and some of the new ones in my office. So I took two racecourse executives to see it. Well, they couldn't believe it. It is night and day. The old stuff and the new, when you see them next to each other, just in some trial boxes. So what you said about the injuries they had since... yes, I'm sure they did. But they need to get with it. They need to see a new one.
How many track management teams have reached out to you over the last several months? And as this, have you talked to the Stronach group?
We've talked to a few people. Nothing's happened yet. But it will do, and it'll be forced upon them by the politicians. The politicians will say, well, you've got to do better. 30 years ago, Formula One drivers were dying at an alarming rate. So the public said, this has got to stop. So Formula One enacted a whole lot of new safety measures, huge. And now Formula One is very safe, thank goodness. And that's what the racing industry is going through. Synthetics are going to be the major, not the only part, but a major part of it.
Michael Dickinson is with us, everyone. And not only are we talking about his return to training pretty much full time and the great success that he's having on the racetrack in the afternoons, but also the groundbreaking work of we have to say now, Mr. and Mrs. Dickinson. We can't just say Michael Dickinson anymore, obviously. We've got to start giving...
It's Joan Wakefield, my wife.
Nice.
But I'm known as Mr. Wakefield.
in certain quarters, I guess. There you go. Michael, going back to the first pass, the first generation, was there ever any issue about learning curve and any cutting of corners or trying
No,
to...
No one cut any corners. They just made mistakes.
Okay.
And everyone makes mistakes when they start out. You can't expect to get a perfect 10 the first time you get hold of the bat. So there were lots of mistakes.
I'm curious too. They just ran the John Nayrud, a couple of weeks ago at Belmont, and it occurs to me: did you ever? You must have had conversations with John years ago about synthetics, given that he tried to pioneer them himself.
Yes. I knew that was a long time ago, though. It was before I was into synthetics, I think, John Nayrud. But he was a great man. I used to love talking to him, but I don't think we talked about synthetics.
Interesting. Well, because he tried that tartan, he had the tartan turf that they experimented with, and that, late 60s, and that was, or even earlier, and didn't go so well. But you make a great point. It's an evolution, and it just does feel, Michael, like we're all going to have to revisit this, and everyone's going to have to understand the ramifications of the external pressures.
Right.
Well, I'm delighted. It's been way, way too long, and we could go on for a long time, given all the fascinating achievements of your career. But we'll save it, and we'll look forward to seeing Pamina and the rest of them out there as the summer unfolds, and we'll talk again soon.
Thank you very much, Steve. Thank
Michael
you for the opportunity.
Dickinson. Not at exactly. Anything. Anytime you want, okay. And especially, on the surface issue, because I think... those that are resisting are going to have to visit this. I mean, it's...
Now, just about the bettors. Sometimes the bettors didn't like them, but the bettors love it in the UK. Barney Curley was one of the biggest gamblers of all time. He loves betting on that.
Well, if it's good enough, if it's good enough for Barney, right?
Yes, okay. Thank you. Okay.
Michael Dickinson, unbelievable. Just a fascinating. And Joan Wakefield, I think we're going to have to include Mrs. Dickinson in these conversations, because she picked up the mantle and is instrumental in you know, creating this new generation at Tapita. I just felt it was important to hear from Michael. Let's take a quick break here. And Catherine Day Phillips has been listening in, and we'll get Catherine a little late to her. But Catherine, Mr. Haverkamp, we want to talk about bringing horse back after a layoff and winning a stake, something Michael Dickinson is a little famous for. We'll come back with Catherine Day Phillips and Pete Fornatale. And who am I missing? Billy Koch in the next hour. Lots to do yet. Stay with us.